Chapter 3. The Journal. Matthew speaking. It was perhaps 7 or 8 years ago, while visiting the farm, that Granddaddy gave me a copy of his journal. The journal was his diary of sorts. Of the many stories he had recorded in the journal, one was about an event that occurred when their grandson Jimmy was a young teen. Jimmy's best friend at the time was a kid named Terry. The events that had been the pinnacle of Jimmy and Terry's summer vacation were penned in the journal. Although I recall meeting Terry a few years ago, I do not remember seeing him at the birthday gathering. I wonder what he's up to. What has he heard the news about Grandmommy and Granddaddy passing away? I hope so. As I was about to call it a day, for some reason, I felt drawn to reread the story about Jimmy and Terry's adventure in the cave. I reached for the leather-bound journal. A piece of paper was jutting out from it. It's odd that I had not noticed this before. The card was titled, "To My Dear Grandson Matthew." It marked the exact section I wanted to read. Granddaddy had written a brief note on the card. Here is the note he wrote. "Dear Matthew, I know you may have a few questions for me about this letter. Well, they'll have to wait until another time. It's important that you read over the section dated August 25th, 2010, before you come. I have been told that you will understand more as the next few days unfold. Keep your light burning bright. Love, Granddaddy. P.S. I also gave Jimmy a copy of my journal." I quickly began to read the section marked in the journal. Journal entry for August 25th, 2010. This story is drawn from my original conversation with Jimmy and Terry, as well as my own experiences on that day. The summer of 2009, my grandson Jimmy and his best friend Terry had discovered the mouth of an old cave on our farm in the western part of Virginia. My wife and I have lived on this property for over 30 years. It was a gift from King Avi for our service to him. These two boys, Jimmy and Terry, were not overly caught up with playing video games and other electronics that often rob our children of a childhood living outdoors. The cave that the boys had discovered had been known by us and the previous owners. To everyone's knowledge, it was nothing more than a small opening on the side of Shadow Mountain that backed up to our 60-acre farm. By the way, many refer to our property as the farm. I'm not sure why. Perhaps its rural, isolated setting made our guests feel like they were on a farm. For the past 3 years now, the boys had explored all around the property. They would come in for a snack or lunch and share their adventures with their grandmommy and me. The boys did mention that they had noticed the opening to the cave the day before their summer vacation was over. The cave was next to a massive stone deep in the woods behind what was called the old barn. At some point, it was a working barn, but many years separated then from now. The boys had shared with us their excitement about finding the cave. You could feel their frustration when the time did not allow them to explore it. Night was falling quickly, and their summer vacation was ending the next day. They had to return to their parents and to the city. The cave would have to wait until next summer. All through the following school year, the boys spent their free time planning how they would conquer their cave. They pictured themselves as great cave explorers like Stephen Bishop, who in the 1800s became famous for being one of the lead explorers to Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. It was only natural for two young boys to imagine their cave as equally as large as Mammoth Cave. They dreamed that they, too, would become famous. The school year dragged by slowly. To speed up the clock, they decided to make some money. By doing chores for friends and family, they were able to make a few dollars, mostly raking the gazillion leaves that never seemed to stop falling. All the better for them. They figured that they needed about $100 to outfit their spelunking trip that was planned for next summer. Now, this wasn't going to be like all the other summers when they went through the farm. Oh, no. They would be a year older. Plus, they had to be really serious about exploring the cave. Eventually, the months passed by. The leaves did finally all fall to the ground, only to be converted into cash for the much-needed equipment. By mid-December, the barren tree limbs were being pushed around by winter's cold breath. An early snow provided a white Christmas. To their surprise, as Christmas gifts, both of them received some of the gear they had anticipated needing next summer. Just over 5 months to go. Spring brought her rain and fresh flowers. The time was getting close. Finally, they welcomed the last day of school. As usual, they left the week after school let out in order to spend most of the summer at the farm. Both their parents' careers kept them busy all year round. It worked out best for everyone to have the boys spend the summer in the country and away from the bustling city. One June evening, they stepped out of my son's car at the farm. My son is Jimmy's dad. Even though it was late in the day, and they had just arrived at the farm, the boys headed to the cave. Except for a few fallen dead tree limbs at the entrance, it remained just like they had left it last summer. A small opening formed the entrance to the cave. The opening was about twice as large as the mouth of a bushel basket that Grandmommy used to gather apples from her orchard. The next morning, just after having some of Grandmommy's pancakes, the explorers entered into the mouth of the cave. Jimmy tied off one end of the rope near the entrance of the cave. In case they lost their way, they could follow the rope to safety. At least, that was the plan. The coin was okay, at first. Although the entrance was smaller than a regular door, once inside, they felt confident enough to continue into the dark recess of the cave. The boys had traveled only about 100 feet or so when, without rhyme or reason, Jimmy disappeared. Now, in serious panic, Terry was anxious to find his friend. Jim? Jimmy? Terry looked around in desperation. He noticed a place where the floor of the cave, well, the floor just wasn't there. Had his friend fallen into the dark, black, empty hold? Terry's stomach was in knots. Although the air in the cave was around 55 degrees, sweat was running down his face. Cautiously, he crawled to the edge. He shined his light over the ledge in direction that he expected to see his buddy, Jim. John Brownett, why does it have to be so dark? Jimmy? 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 Still no answer. It was as if Terry's voice was being swallowed by the darkness of the cave. His mind raced as to what he should do now. He couldn't leave his friend, but he needed help. Desperately, he shined his light into the darkness. Nothing. No sound. Just a cave full of black nothingness. Then, Terry had an unnerving eeriness come over him at the realization that his own voice did not have an echo. It was like he was hollering into a big bucket filled with sand. This gave him goosebumps. As loud as he was calling out for Jim, it should have created some sort of an echo. But nothing. Not even his movements around the ledge created a noticeable sound. Terry's heart raced. In vain, he leaned over the ledge, reaching out his hand as far as possible, trying to stretch out the light beam from his five-cell flashlight a couple of more inches. With barely a whisper, Terry asked, more to himself than anyone else, "Where are you, Jimmy?" The seconds seemed like hours. Still, there was no sight or sound of his buddy, Jim. "Where did he go so quickly?" Terry said, still searching over the ledge for his buddy, as his mind retraced their steps just before... "What? What?" Absolute panic ran through his mind. He tried to roll over. "No! No!" He felt his feet being lifted off the ground. "No! No! Stop! Please! Help!" His desperate pleas fell on deaf ears. It was too late. Darkness followed. The first thought to enter his mind was to reach for his flashlight. To Harry's surprise, his flashlight was still in his hand. In the panic of the moment, just before all went dark, his hand must have held on to the light as if it was his only source of hope. Now, in the obscurity of the cave, his only hope was in his flashlight, or so he thought. No longer did he hold the rope that was designed to be their method of escape. Where was he? Where was Jimmy? Dare he use his flashlight now? Did it even work anymore? Although the darkness hid his unknown attacker, it also hid him from being seen. "Where am I?" Feeling a small yet scary sense of security within the darkness, he felt around with his hands. His fingers ran over the damp soil where he was lying. Running his hand over his head and face, he searched for signs of injury. Slowly, he bent his legs and his arms, then his toes and his fingers of the hand that had been holding the light. So far, so good. Odd, he thought. Everything felt okay. But where am I? What just happened? Now both he and his friend were lost. Terry continued to ponder his predicament. Where was Jimmy? Where am I? What just happened? Who else is in this cave? What time is it? What am I to do now? Hope was nowhere to be found. Terry was looking for Jimmy when he was grabbed by his feet and he found himself here. Where am I? He was lost in the cave, and he knew that no one was looking for him. His heart beat so hard he thought it would explode. The racing of his heart pounding in his chest and his heavy breathing were the only sounds he heard. All else was deathly quiet. Terry held his flashlight with a grip of steel, afraid he might lose it in the darkness. The sun's light does not penetrate the depths of most caves, especially this one. As with any cave, the darkness found here never knew the warmth or light of the sun. Caves know darkness as few other things do. Even the critters that lived here were forced to adjust to life without the sun. You see, in the deep darkness of a cave, either you learn to live in it or you ceased to exist. It only takes a short time for the lack of light to steal away one's perspective and hope. A cave's darkness, unlike the darkness, O Lord, reason is not evil. A cave has no intention or desire to inflict harm on anyone or anything. The darkness that is there is just the way it is. In the past days, now long lost to time, visitors in a cave used an open flame to light their way. Today, it was most often some type of artificial light. The cave and her usual guest were not concerned about the darkness or the absence of sunlight. Only the outsiders, those who live by sight, who dare to venture into the darkness, were unaccustomed to the lack of light. Even the few brave explorers who enter like Terry and Jimmy rely too heavily upon their temporary light sources, often to their demise. Darkness is what it is, the complete absence of light. Given enough time or the right circumstances, the hottest of fires or the most powerful of batteries will eventually succumb to the endlessness of the darkness. The critters that live in total obscurity of a cave rely upon their sense of touch, hearing, taste, and smell. The sense of sight is no longer useful. When the darkness of a cave consumes you, it steals your only source of receiving light, your eyes, natural light, that is. Terry was fighting panic at every thought. Unable to see in this darkness, he soon learned to rely upon his other senses, hearing, smell, and touch. He quickly became cognitive of how much he relied upon his sense of sight. It was as if his eyes were no longer available. Open them as wide as he could, they, for all practical purposes, were useless. He was totally blind. Terry was your typical teenager. He enjoyed life. Sure, he'd been to a church service, but the whole church experience did not do much for him. He had met people who called themselves Christians, but he also met people who were doctors. To him, it was just another label that adults used to identify themselves. To him, it seemed that adults were more concerned with their labels than with anything important or real. As he lay on his belly on the floor of the cave, he wished that God was real. He wished that he knew how to get his help. Terry was alone to deal with his precarious situation. Slowly, Terry forced himself to focus. He had to come up with a plan of action. For several months, he and Jimmy had planned for this trip. No detail had been overlooked, they thought. However, they could not have foreseen this. Terry lay motionless, too afraid to switch on his flashlight. As he continued to formulate a plan of action, he noticed a presence. Nothing had touched him, yet he could feel something or someone right next to his side. It was as if, whatever it was, had one foot planted firmly on either side of his prone body. He so wanted to reach out his trembling hand to be sure, but his arms were frozen in their position, supporting his chest and shoulders. His breathing had almost stopped. Perspiration was dropping off the end of his chin. Tears formed in his eyes. He was scared. He noticed that his knees were trembling to the point where he was sure they would come out of their joints. He just wanted to go home. He soon found himself saying under his breath, "Please, God, help me. I am so scared. Please, please, God, help me find Jimmy and get out of here." Terry's silent prayer for help continued for several minutes. Sometime later, he noticed that something was different. But what? He still sensed that there was something or someone standing over him. He knew that if he were to reach out his hand, he would surely touch whatever or whoever was standing there. An odd sensation came over him. He was no longer shaking, and he was not as afraid as he was just a few moments before. He pondered what was going on. Who is here with me? Did God actually hear my prayer? Without warning, he was surrounded by an unseen yet very real battle. Swish, clang, swish, swish, clang. He knew he heard it, but what was he hearing? It sounded like something moving swiftly through the air. The sounds increased as the unseen activity grew in intensity around his motionless body. Vividly, he recalled the few medieval movies that he and Jimmy had watched. He recalled the scenes with sword-fighting knights and gladiators. He knew what the unseen noise was. The sound that he was hearing was surely that of what seemed to be swords being swung through the air, followed by the clang of two swords striking each other. There was also another, more dull sound. It was as if the sword was hitting something other than metal. But what? His mind raced as he attempted to make sense of what was happening. He found himself speaking out loud. How could this be? How could anyone see in this dark place have a sword fight? Without giving it any thought, he found himself up on his knees, flashlight at the ready. The unseen battle continued to rage before his unseeing eyes. As quickly as it all began, there was once again silence. Terry switched on his flashlight, illuminating the cave around him. Nothing, absolutely nothing was in sight. No one was here. With a surge of unfamiliar competence, he raised up off his knees to finally stand on his own two feet. Carefully, he surveyed the area all around. No one was in sight. He examined the damp floor of the cave for any signs of what had created all the commotion just a few moments ago. He could not tell from any evidence left behind, because the dirt floor of the cave was very smooth. There were no signs of footprints from either a person or an animal. To his surprise, he noticed his day pack about 10 feet from where he had been lying on the floor. Cautiously, he walked over to where it was. He slowly bent over, reaching for the shoulder strap. All the while, he darted his light to and fro, so as not to be caught off guard by whatever had attacked him earlier. Carefully, he searched around in hopes of getting his bearings. From where he was standing, there were at least 3 ways in or out of this part of the cave. He shined his light towards the ceiling. There, about 8 feet above from where he was standing, was an opening. He thought to himself, was that the ledge where I had been looking for Jimmy? His confidence was growing. He felt confident, too, that it was the same ledge. It was where he had been before he woke up down here in darkness. Now that I'm down here, can I climb back up there? Approaching the base of the wall just under the opening, he was pleasantly surprised to find an old ladder. It was made of rope, and the rungs were strips of wood. It was so covered with dirt that it blended completely into the wall of the cave. He looked around behind himself to be sure that he was alone. Then he reached out one hand and grabbed the rung that was just over head high. He tested his weight before committing to putting his foot on the lowest rung. With the swiftness of a lizard, he scrambled up the ladder to the ledge above. Once on the ledge, he had a sense of being safe and back on somewhat familiar turf. However, he jolted as he recalled what had happened the last time he stood in the same spot. Not taking any chances this time, he kept his flashlight scanning back and forth in even movements. If whatever it was came back again, at least this time, he was going to see it. Okay, he said to himself, where is my safety line? He searched every square inch of the dirty floor until he found it. "Yes," he explained out loud. While he held his flashlight in one hand, he ran the rope through his fingers to locate the end of the rope. He'd guessed that he had used about 3/4 of the 100 feet of half-inch rope. That meant that he was about 75 feet from the entrance of the cave. Instead of just holding the end of the rope as he had done before, this time, he ran the rope through his belt loops of his jeans. He then tied the very end of the rope securely around his waist. With his confidence building every minute, he slowly contemplated his next step. Jimmy was still in here somewhere, but where? Not knowing where Jimmy was, and not knowing who had thrown him off the ledge, he decided to follow the safety line to the mouth of the cave. With one hand, he held his flashlight, and with the other hand, he slowly worked the rope through his fingers as he retraced his steps to the entrance of the cave. Back and forth, he shined his light, making sure the way in front of him was clear and that no one was creeping up behind him. His plan was return to the mouth of the cave, then go and get Jimmy's granddaddy to help him find Jimmy. When he was about 20 feet from the cave's entrance, he turned a corner and was startled by the sight of two bright lights. Unable to see due to the brightness of the lights, he called out, "Who's there?" Relief ran over his body at the sound of familiar voices. They ran towards each other and enjoyed a joyous threesome bear hug. You cannot imagine the relief we experienced. With me bringing up the rear, the boys joyfully led the way to the entrance of the cave into the bright sunshine. When Jimmy saw how dirty Terry was, he laughed so hard that he cried. Terry's face looked much like that of a miner. His shirt and jeans were as black as coal. Terry's remaining fear soon gave way to laughter as he enjoyed the companionship of his good friend. While the boys were having their reunion, I found a seat under a white oak tree. A large root protruded from the ground near the trunk, which formed a perfect resting place. I was enjoying the shade, but more so, enjoying the moment, knowing that the boys were safe. As I sat there, I lowered my head and removed my hat, revealing my full head of white hair. I needed a few minutes to give thanks to King Avi for my prayers being answered. It was not long ago, after the boys started their venture into the cave, that I was approached by my wife. She was in the midst of cleaning up the kitchen when she had a concern run through her body and soul about the boys. This is what she would call a check in her spirit. It was when the king gives a light bearer a warning that action needed to be taken ASAP. This check may be described as a gut feeling or a knowing deep within her spirit. Although she did not know exactly what was happening, she knew that it was not good, and there was no time to waste. Grandmommy found me, her husband of 60 years, sitting on the front porch. As soon as I saw her come out the screen door, I knew what was up. We quickly joined hands and asked King Avi to give us direction as to what we were to do. It only took a moment when I said to her, "Stay here and keep praying. I think I know where the boys are." Stopping by my workshop for a length of nylon rope, a flashlight, and a headlamp, I headed off through the cave. Although the boys' plan to explore the old cave was no secret, no one expected them to encounter any trouble. You see, the old cave only went in a few feet before it ended, or so everyone believed. Terry and Jimmy, being the explorers they were, found a small opening about 20 feet inside the cave. It was almost hidden from view. You could only see it after you walked around the rock that was sitting right in front of it. As soon as I reached the cave, a smile crossed my face when I noticed the boys' safety line. I would have little trouble following the rope to where the boys were. I have been a light bearer warrior for most of my adult life. In my younger years, I had disrupted many of the Lord's reasons plans. I had been instrumental in helping many young light bearers learn how to fan the flame of their lights. Grandmommy and I were at the end of our journey in the land of Adama. Although we still helped young light bearers who came our way, mostly we simply enjoyed the winter of our lives. As I made my way into the cave, I sensed an old presence. I knew that things were not as they should be. I stopped just for a moment to release the light of Prince Shai, for I knew that I needed to see more than what was visible to my human eyes. Yes, I was sure now who was in this cave, and I moved forward with the agility of a man who was a third my age. It only took a moment for me to reach Jimmy. Jimmy was half sitting, half lying against the wall of the cave. He was dazed and not responsive as I knelt beside him. An encounter with a henchman can do this to people, especially the young ones. Without wasting a moment, I lifted my grandson over my shoulder and headed to the mouth of the cave. Once in the warmth of the sunlight and with the help of my prayers over him, Jimmy soon came around. After Jimmy was back to being himself, he joined me as we re-entered the cave to find Terry. We were both pleased to find him, Terry, walking towards us just a few feet inside the cave. I returned my hat to my head. It was time that Grandmommy and I have a talk with the boys. The four of us would have this conversation after dinner. Once the boys and I returned to the house, we heard Grandmommy singing a praise song in the kitchen. While I was off looking for the boys, she continued to pray. As she prayed, she had a peace in her spirit, and she knew that all was well. She thought that a fresh apple pie would be a nice treat for dessert after dinner. Once Grandmommy laid eyes on the boys, in spite of their apparent need for a good bath, she hugged them both until they groaned from the power of her hug. Later that evening, over fresh lemonade, coffee, and apple pie, the boys recounted their adventure. Sitting on the sofa, they spoke of their time in the cave. They walked us through the entire ordeal. At one point, Terry's eyes became moist as he remembered how scared he was lying on the dirt floor in the cave. He shared how he had prayed for God to help him. He told them about the sword fight and all that had happened afterwards. Terry looked at us and asked us to explain what had happened in the cave. Grandmommy and I operated like a well-oiled machine as we told them about the unseen world and the world of Lord Reason. We also told them about King Avi and Prince Shai. We explained what it meant to be a light bearer for the king. We told them about protectors and the role they had in looking out for light bearers. The coffee became cold sitting in our cups as we, a pair of seasoned light bearers, told of our own adventures. The boys held on to every word as we shared stories about Lord Reason, my old friend Nate, evil activity, and the training of young light bearers. As the hour slipped away, the conversation took a turn when Terry asked, "What do I have to do to become a light bearer?" The wrinkles on our faces seemed to disappear as, once again, we passed the torch of King Avi to Terry. No longer did he focus on the religious people he had known, the adults who felt proud about themselves. Terry knew that most of them were not real light bearers. He now began to see the difference. Jimmy sat quietly as he watched his friend go through a transformation. He was still Terry, but there was clearly something different. He could see it the moment when Terry said yes to receiving the eternal light from the king's son, Prince Shai. Little side note, many people who claim to serve the king as light bearers called themselves Christians. But Terry began to understand that this was not always the case. Sadly, there are even false light bearers. Jimmy knew some of what we, as grandparents, had been saying, and he was now ready to become a light bearer as well. His childhood friend and fellow cave explorer Terry joined Grandmommy and me as Terry received the light from the King's Son. King Avi knew that these two boys were about to become light bearers. That is why the King assigned each of them a protector. The sword fight that Terry had heard was his protector, standing over his frightened body, protecting him from one of Lord Reason's henchmen. End of journal entry, August 25th, 2010. I, Matthew, placed the journal on the bedside table. My fingers ran over the note from Granddaddy. Something did not seem normal. Matthew pondered to himself out loud, how did this note get here on this particular page? I've read this journal many times, and there wasn't a note in it before. Granddaddy said that I would understand more as the next few days unfold. What am I supposed to understand? My mind was deep in thoughts as I fell asleep.